Welcome to another episode of Indie Darlings, the podcast where we discuss indie films. I have a special guest today. We have Drew Spears.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Drew, you chose the film Don's Plum, the 2001. I'm not going to call it an indie darling.
I think it's also unfair to say that it was released in 2001 because it's never been released.
Yeah, because I was like, 2001, it was made in 95.
Yes, and I think screened somewhat locally and to potential distributors around the like mid-90s as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is going to be part of our theme of the month, 90s, grunge. Drew? Why did you choose this film?
Okay, so I want to say like a month ago, you mentioned Larry Clark on Twitter. Like you found some piece of Larry Clark art, mm-hmm. and that just made me like kind of just like unlodge something in my brain about like that kind of like indie 90s film scene. And like I was like, I don't want to do Larry Clark. That bums me out. And then I was like, maybe I'll do, you know, Harmony Korine. But then I was like, oh, I should do Don's Plum because it's like, it's super 90s. It features all of the, you know, 90s indie film brats. It's just a super interesting artifact. It feels very much derivative of like that Miramax-y, like, you know, post Pulp Fiction, post swingers kind of vibe that everyone was doing, you know, diners in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. which I am aesthetically a sucker for, but it's also a fascinating movie because the two stars of it, Tobey Maguire and Leonardo DiCaprio, saw it and were like, oh, we can never have this released because it's I think it is fully improvised and they come off like just huge assholes. And mm-hmm. this is around the time that New York Magazine wrote an article about Leonardo DiCaprio's friend group, colloquially known as the Pussy Posse. I think people kind of got the vibe that, you know, they were bad boys doing bad boy stuff. And though I think the movie tries to make a very lunk-headed criticism of that behavior, it's very easy to watch it and be like, oh, these are what these guys are like in real life. And DiCaprio was obviously coming up from Titanic and that would, you know, sink his like teen heartthrob image. Though I think it's Tobey Maguire who formally like did the lawsuit against it, because Tobey Maguire, who his performance is insane in the movie.
Yes. No one's good in this.
No one. Who do you think the best person in this movie is?
Best person or best performance?
Best performance.
Oddly enough, I feel like Leonardo DiCaprio, his performance, like watching it, like he's an ass. The person he's playing is an asshole.
Yes.
But I remember thinking, oh, this guy can act.
Yeah, he definitely is most magnetic and he's the person who's most like comfortable in his skin. There is some quote that he was like, oh yeah, I'm going to play this like myself times 10. Like that was in maybe the Free Don's Plum website or something. The producer of this film has made a website begging Leonardo DiCaprio and Tobey Maguire to release it. It's called freedonsplum.com. But apparently Leo was like, oh yeah, I really want to play this dirty dude. And it kind of makes you regret that he didn't have a chance to do that in like his like 20s on a, you know, scale of a movie with a script that mm-hmm. would actually be decent.
Yes.
Because it feels like he didn't get into his interesting roles until his like mid-30s to like late-30s. But you're like, oh, this is a magnetic performer who knows mm-hmm. what he's doing around everyone else who's treating it like a... I read a review that put it greatly where it's like, it feels like an acting exercise.
Mm-hmm. It felt like a class.
Yeah, it felt like, oh, so like a bunch of
just
like,
keep going, guys.
Yeah, it's like a bunch of people who like did some class in Van Nuys and then went and were like, let's make a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So this was, it was made in 95. It was directed by R.D. Robb.
Best known for...
For A Christmas Story. He's one of the kids in A Christmas Story.
Yeah, I think, is he not the kid who gets his tongue stuck to the pole?
No, he's not the kid who gets his tongue stuck to the pole, but he's the tiny Weasley kid.
Okay. That's a weird movie where like all the child stars kind of went to do weird things. Because didn't one of them like become a porn guy?
Yeah, the main guy.
Yeah, the main guy like in like the mid 90s.
I think
was
he did some porn.
Yeah. And that goes like, oh, don't you want to see the kid from like Christmas Carol?
No, not really. No. Yeah. Okay. So this movie has almost all of the Pussy Posse. Here's the cast. It is just 90s gold. Scott Bloom, Kevin Connolly, Tobey Maguire, Leonardo DiCaprio, Jenny Lewis, Marissa Ribisi, who is, might be better known as Giovanni Ribisi's sister.
Yes.
And Amber Benson, Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Jeremy Sisto, known for a lot of things, but let's say Clueless.
Yeah.
Ethan Suplee, that name's...
My name is Earl. Scientology.
Boy Meets World.
A few Kevin Smith films.
American History X.
Yeah. You know, you couldn't make an American indie in the 90s without Ethan Suplee. He was like, he blessed every like movie that got released by like Jersey Films or Miramax.
And Nikki Cox.
Yes.
So yeah, the Pussy Posse's in it. And
do you know who Nikki Cox married?
No.
Okay. Two fascinating guys. Number one, Jay Moore, the actor. That kind of makes sense. And they may still be married, but first and foremost, Bobcat Goldthwait.
I was going to guess that.
Yeah.
I know they dated, but I didn't know they married.
From Unhappily Ever After.
Yeah, where they were co-stars.
Yeah, it was the Married with Children ripoff, but the conceit was that this divorced guy had to live in his ex-wife's basement, and his best friend was a talking stuffed bunny.
Yeah, voiced by Bobcat.
Yeah, and then he married Nikki Cox, who was like a WB darling during the 90s.
Oh, yeah. She was like, people were all about her. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to make of that. I hear Bobcat's very nice, though.
Yeah, he's like around. Yeah, I've met him once or twice. He's very sweet.
Uh-huh. Okay, so this movie is in black and white.
Yeah. And because of course it is.
Yeah, yeah. And, oh, man, it starts off crazy.
Yeah. Right off the bat, you get a score from Blake Sennett from Jenny Lewis's band, Rilo Kiley. I think that might be the best part of the movie. The score, like, I think there's like some
fun. The score is definitely interesting.
Yeah. And then the very first thing is Amber Benson getting literally kicked out of a car by
Jeremy Sisto.
Jeremy Sisto.
Physically kicking her out of a car.
Yeah, physically kicks, like, I think, was this the first time that, like, a lot of misogynistic shit was said in the movie? Almost certainly.
I think so. It starts off real heavy. Every man is a monster in this
complete
movie.
Monster. Maybe, who plays the bisexual dude character?
Scott Bloom.
Scott Bloom's character is maybe the least gross.
But here's the thing. In my notes, I wrote down everything Scott Bloom says is awful.
Okay.
Because his thing is that, like, he's a poet. He's deep. The first time we see Scott Bloom, we see him from the reverse, butt naked.
Yeah. And he just had sex.
Mm-hmm. With Jenny Lewis, who is completely clothed for some reason.
She's in the bed. And I think they're, like, the first, like, four scenes in the movie is... Tobey Maguire, Leo, Amber Benson, Eve from Entourage, and Scott Bloom, trying to talk girls into going to Don's Plum with them. Don Plum is a diner, restaurant, bar. It was a real restaurant in the Valley in the 90s. The great line that Jenny Lewis must have improvised was like, she was like, yeah, I'll come because you didn't make me. Or was it you did make me?
I don't know. I'm just like overwhelmed by because like I get weirdly filled with disgust when I see something and I can tell where the intent is.
Yeah.
I could when I saw that guy naked because it's for a while. And I'm like, oh, you know, that was his fucking idea.
Yeah, he was like, let me do it. Like, I can do it. Like,
you don't have to do it. No. It's my character. It's adding to the scene. I've been jogging. Yeah. I look great. And it's so strange and it's so not sexy because Jenny is she's wearing a button down.
Yeah, she is like, it would be how a Mormon might have sex, I'd imagine.
Well, my thought is that like if I was in that scenario, I've been dressed for a while. I'm about to ask him, why are you still here? Why are you still naked?
Now that came before or after the amazing scene with Tobey Maguire. Because Tobey Maguire's character is introduced in a jazz cafe.
How did I forget about this?
Your brain tried to scrub it out. So they made Proto, you know that scene in La La Land that's bad where it's Ryan Gosling describing jazz?
Yes.
They made the Proto version of that where there is intercut with a jazz burlesque performance featuring, I want to say, the only person of color in the entire movie.
Oh, yes.
Just like a real, like you know this is around the time of swingers where like swing music and bebop jazz was real big in the 90s with bowling shirts. It was like that kind of exotica
zoot suit,
and it's just like a guy going beady bop bop beep 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 bop bop, and then like women are like dancing sexually. It's not a burlesque show, it's not a bar, it is a coffee shop where these women are doing a burlesque dance. I think this performance must have been shot to pad out the runtime of the movie. That's the only thing that makes sense. But Tobey Maguire is trying to talk women into having sex with him. He is striking out. One girl says that she needs to wash her hair. His performance is the most insane in the entire movie, I think.
It's hard because the thing is, this movie's formatted so strangely.
Yes.
Like when they that scene is so crazy. But the thing is, when they do get to Don's Plum, that restaurant or whatever, there's this thing, this device they use called the Bathroom of Inner Monologues.
Yes, this is where it's, the Bathroom of Inner Monologues, this is where it's the most acting school, because this is an improvised movie. So I think the idea that Artie Robb and the rest of the posse was going for is like, all these men are like doing macho posturing and being douches in like, front of the pack, but then they go in the bathroom and they'll monologue and they'll talk about how they're scared or they're like hurt or, you know, and every character does it. And it's never really introduced. It's cut in so jarringly. And I wonder if this was like the last thing they shot, because because a big part of like the controversy around Don's Plum was that Leo maintains that he was under the impression that it was supposed to be a short film. Mm-hmm. Even though I guess he shot it over 6 nights and shot over 300,000 feet of film. Which is an insane amount for what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just like all these like monologues where guys like talk about like, oh man, it's hard being me. I don't know why I gotta be a douchebag. Mm-hmm. And then you come back and they are busy calling women the C word.
Everyone, the women and the men, everyone, even the waitresses, even the owner.
Don Plum himself.
Who's played by a 20-year-old.
Yes.
In a smoking jacket.
Yeah.
And
he has a great line where he's like, I'm sleeping with two waitresses, which is sort of okay. Like,
you want to know how I'm doing? Francine just sucked my dick. That's how I'm doing.
It would later be done better in the Spike Lee movie 25th Hour with Edward Norton, the fuck you monologue, which like I remember seeing that as a teenager and being like, oh yeah, that's like real. But like, what if that was absolutely nothing?
Here's the thing. Like okay, so every time anyone says anything and they have a thought that's underlying it. Okay, so you know when you get scripts and the actors have dialogue and in the parentheses it's like sarcastically or doesn't mean it. It'll I feel like they're saying those action lines in the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's just like, because this girl will be like, I smoke weed all the time. And this is Jenny Lewis's line. And then you cut to her in the bathroom smoking crack.
Yeah. And Jenny Lewis's character confesses to herself in the bathroom that she was molested as a child. Mm-hmm. And she blames herself for it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like, you could tell like this was really like, they thought like, oh, we're talking about real shit, because there's a lot of discussion about like masturbation and like bisexuality.
It's not organic.
It's super not. It'd be like, you know, girls jerk off too. Yeah. I mean,
how often?
You're telling me you jerk off 3 times a day? And then like, then something will come up, or
even the women are misogynistic. It's so insane.
The only character that's arguably not is Amber Benson, who is discarded very quickly. I don't know why the characters hate her. Okay, so
I thought I missed something. Okay, it was so intense.
Don's Plum is mostly a movie that takes place at a diner with Tobey Maguire and Eve from Entourage and Leonardo DiCaprio and Amber Benson and Ginny Lewis and
this other girl later joins them.
They like banter for a little bit, and like Leonardo DiCaprio orders chicken wings, and then he gets pissed off. And they explain that it's like a bar that like is shitty, but it's like theirs, and it's a cool place to be. Mm-hmm. And then a larger woman walks by, and Leonardo DiCaprio makes a bunch of mean jokes, and then Amber Benson calls him an asshole, and then he like just goes off on her. She's a hippie, which is denoted because she has one dreadlocked strand.
Yeah.
And then they all take turns berating Amber Benson until she runs out crying, and then Leonardo DiCaprio throws a drink at her head as she's leaving. And then the last thing you see of her is she is kicking Ephraim Entourage's Jeep.
Oh, there's a scene where she literally throws a Birkenstock. And I was like, this movie, someone just threw a Birkenstock.
There's nothing in this movie.
Yeah. So when he... Amber Benson is fucking up his car, it's a Jeep because of course,
yeah.
And she pulls a bat out of the back seat of the Jeep because of course he has one,
yeah.
And she smashes up his windshield and they start playing heavy metal music. But the thing is they cut to it and they cut back to the scene in the diner and then they cut back to her and it goes back and forth and it's not, the editing's terrible.
Yeah, the editing, I think it really is like, oh, well, like, we shot a bunch of disjointed shit. Like, how do we get it in there? There's no real natural, like, transition point, and it just becomes, like, just this mess.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, things will be shot very chaotically and then, like, intercut very abruptly. And it just doesn't fit what's mostly the tone of the movie, which is this hangout, like, dialogue-heavy film. But I think they wanted to, like, have some sort of propulsive action by maybe the editing, and it just doesn't work.
So I could tell this movie was improvised, and usually they do that to give the film a sense of naturalism. Here's the thing, though. When you first see Leonardo DiCaprio, he approaches a friend who's on a cell phone.
A brick, big brick.
A huge, huge Zach Morris phone. He takes the phone from the friend and starts calling whoever. Leonardo DiCaprio starts calling up different women. His friend is talking to him the whole time while he's talking on the phone. It's the most insane thing that I've ever seen. I was like, is there someone else in the scene? Who's talking to who? Why are you talking to him when he's clearly talking to someone else?
You can also tell it's improvised because how often like the word bro is just like, it's like that empty like tick for them. And yeah, I think that you can see why maybe like DiCaprio and Maguire afterwards were like, oh, this doesn't reflect well on us. Because, like, at the same time that this movie was made, all of these stories were coming up about, like, you know, their crew getting in, like, fights or throwing drinks at people. Like, this was behavior that was reflected in their real lives.
Yeah.
So, like, even if, like, I think the film was attempting to do a critique of, like, misogyny, but it never really has anything to say about it. And by following what they were doing in the tabloids, you'd just be like, oh, this is who they are.
Yeah.
Especially the improvised nature of it. Like, oh, DiCaprio chose to use the language he uses throughout the film. They say the word biatch a bunch. Like, that's their preferred way of saying bitch. They just say biatch.
I forgot people used to say that. I forgot.
E uses that a ton. Ginny Lewis and the other woman at the restaurant make out very inorganically.
Oh, yeah. And it's weirdly in front of everyone and the boys start cheering and it feels so gross. It reminds me of that end scene from Requiem to Dream.
Yes. Like, it's just like they're cheering on. They're just like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, it doesn't feel like they're two sexually liberated women because the thing is that they're both. Well, one of them, I think, is just a lesbian, but Jenny Lewis is bisexual. And then they're like, wow, she's so hot and she's so hot. And then like, that's fine or whatever. But the way they kiss the men, they make it seem like it's for them.
Oh, it's entirely. And like what was like then earlier discussed by the bisexual male character, like everyone was like weirdly turned off by it. And I think they were more or less like said like bisexuality is OK when it's a woman.
So many references. This made me laugh. They're talking about music and they're This was in 95. Kurt Cobain died in 92 or 93.
I think that's right.
And they talk about Nirvana. They're like, Nirvana needed to breathe.
Oh, God.
Yeah. It just, I was like, shut the fuck up. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like, most of the movie is this one conversation, and I couldn't tell you what all they talked about because it's nonsense and it doesn't matter.
Do you remember the scene when Leonardo DiCaprio enters the restaurant?
No, refresh it for me.
Oh, God. It is so crazy. I wrote it down. Okay, so you see him enter the restaurant, and there's a fish tank right next to the entrance. He comes in like a bat out of hell and stares at the fish so intensely that you would think that someone said, there's a fish tank inside. You have 30 seconds to look at it, and then you're going to be quizzed on it. That's how intensely he looks at these fucking fish. I'm like, did he know they were there? What is he looking for? What's happening? Mm-hmm.
He's the biggest asshole of the whole group. And then in his bathroom monologue, he reveals that his dad was like abusive and never there. Mm-hmm. And that backwards job. Also, at one point, he puts in fake teeth, like big buck teeth in his mouth, and then picks his nose. And it's never addressed.
Okay. There was a part in the when. Okay. So they're talking about literally nothing. And then all of a sudden, Leonardo DiCaprio gets very upset. Do you remember why?
Okay, what would have Leonardo DiCaprio been really upset about?
Was it something? And then all of a sudden he started monologuing about how his dad shot himself.
Oh, yeah. I think they were just talking about their, like, families and stuff like that and drugs. Everything gets to the point. Because this is the problem with a fully improvised movie oftentimes is, like, you don't arrive at the next, like, beat organically.
Mm-hmm.
It comes out of nowhere. Like, that's why I think the editing's so choppy, because there's probably no just natural edit points. At one point, they're playing the game Never Have I Ever.
Mm.
Toby Maguire. Oh, yeah, when they're talking about smoking weed, it's hysterical, because it's just a very, like, 17-year-old boy. Like, yeah, I like to smoke weed. Yeah, yeah, I do it a lot. Toby Maguire, like, plays his character's, like, wide-eyed and strung out, mm-hmm. and it's so strange, because, like, he will then go do, I think, one of the best roles of his career in The Ice Storm very shortly after this.
Oh, this was before Cider House Rules.
Yeah, so he's about to do the best work of his career, and he is just playing this weirdo. Like, mm-hmm. it's off-putting mm-hmm. what Tobey Maguire does in this film.
Kevin Connolly's, before this... What was he best known for?
I think he was literally best known for being in their crew.
Okay.
I think he like had like a few like early 90s things. I remember there like watching a movie and being like, oh, Kevin Connolly is in this super young.
Okay.
But.
Because what's funny is he has a storyline where he sees a producer that he auditioned for come in. And then he goes to say hi or whatever, and she tries to seduce him or whatever.
She's like, I will suck your dick if you take my role in my big movie. I want to fuck you so hard, Ethan Montourage.
Yeah.
And out of nowhere.
It was so abrasive. Like, Harvey Weinstein would be like, that was inappropriate.
Yeah. Don's Plum really does feel a little bit like proto-Entourage.
Before Entourage.
Yeah.
And Kevin Connolly, after this awful interaction, he goes back to his friends and he acts like he just won the goddamn lottery.
Yeah. And he described her as like, yeah, she's Spielberg with a pussy.
Oh, God. And she's there with like a date or something.
Yeah. And then the guy like comes back and he's like, hey, you guys are hitting it off.
I'm just like, what's your function, man? Yeah. Where are you?
All the while, other things that happen in the movie, Ethan Suplee and another guy come in as like...
Oh, they're super drunk?
They're super drunk homeless people, and they're belittled by the gang.
Well, here's what's strange. They ask them to come smoke a cigarette with them or whatever. Oh, also, this is the 90s, so everyone's smoking.
Yeah.
And they're like, they kind of ask them to join them, and I'm like, never in a million fucking years would these awful people... see a shirtless drunk person enter a restaurant and be like, hey, come join us.
Yeah. I don't know why Ethan Suplee would take that role.
A role.
Yeah. They make fun of this guy that's eating dinner by himself. Mm-hmm. Like, all their behavior is just very, like, cruel in a way teenagers can be cruel. And I guess they weren't that older than teenagers.
And then there's the waitress character, Fran. Mm-hmm.
Which I think they arguably do the smartest thing with her, or maybe it's her choice, where she's like, talks in a real, you know, cutesy, mousy voice.
Mr. Hey, J.
Hey there, mister. Would you like your chicken wings? And all of them treat her like shit, even though they say that this is their regular.
Openly horrible to her.
Disdainful of this woman who is serving them and, like, giving them everything. And she's, you know, just like, sure thing, Leo. I'll make your chicken wings extra crispy. And then she'll go into the bathroom and she'll drop her voice.
Yeah.
And, like, I like that idea. The fact that that's a performative thing.
I just thought it was funny she was doing all that just to be a waitress.
Yeah. And she's like, hates Don Plum, even though they're hooking up. Maybe she's hooking up with him so he'll move her shift,
something?
Because she doesn't want to be on the shift with these assholes.
Yeah. I'm just like, you're sleeping with your creepy boss to take you away from a shift where you have to deal with creeps.
Mm-hmm. The film accumulates with a shoving match between Tobey Maguire and Eve from Entourage, while Leonardo DiCaprio and Jenny Lewis are in the other part of the bar where, like, they're, like, kind of bonding over childhood trauma. And it's like the film is about to make, like, some sort of connection between them. And then Leonardo DiCaprio wants to fuck her in the bar, and she tells him off and he shoves her. But then they're outside during the fight between Maguire and E. Or was it the other guy? Anyway, big fight. And then they make up, and then someone lights their shirt on fire, and then they walk off laughing.
Oh, yeah. I said at this point it turns into a guess ad. It's very strange because they take turns holding the burning shirt and looking at it. And I wrote biatch in my notes. Biatch slapped. You just biatch slapped someone. People keep fighting because nothing's happening.
There's no real point where, like, it's like, I understand why that person's mad at that other person.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I was reading some articles about the Pussy Posse that was written during this time period, and apparently it was regularly speculated that these friendships were completely artificial, or, like, that DiCaprio would, like, befriend people that he viewed as rivals, both in Hollywood and also for, like, female attention. Mm. So I think maybe that's reflected in it, that these guys, so friends, like, don't actually like each other.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm also just, like, speculating that all this was unintentional.
There's a part where they're arguing. Tobey Maguire keeps saying, "Don't put your finger in my face," but the Kevin Connolly's finger is never in his face. And there's I wrote down at one point, if these were my friends, I would kill myself, because everyone's just so shitty. And then even the only time anyone calls out any sort of bad behavior, it's one of the girls. But at some point, they just kind of drop it. They're like, yeah, fuck them.
At any given point, it's like, you would leave. But instead, like, they're, like, hanging out for the rest of the evening.
Yeah. Like, there's so many times when someone's like, you know what? You're a real asshole. And I'm like, yeah, what they did was psychotic.
And then you're going to hang out with them for another 50 minutes. And, like, at any point, I mean, in theory, they're all trying to sleep with these women, but they never really come on to them. Like, it's never, like, they're never trying to seduce them. I mean, Leo DiCaprio has his arm around Jenny Lewis a little bit. So it's like they're just hanging out with these near strangers. And I mean, clearly the movie's about the male relationships.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, what's the point of any of this? It never makes a comment on, like, why these men, like, were trying to chase these girls, or, like, why they could never consummate the relationships. And it never really takes a strong, like, stance, either ironic or not, about, like, whether their, like, behavior was frivolous or, like, condemning it. Because, like I said, you know, this is how, like, it was reported in the tabloids that they acted in real life. You know, there was some big fight around Elizabeth Berkley at one of the nightclubs. DiCaprio got written up regularly for, like, throwing drinks off of, like, a bridge in New York. There's some big fight with Jay Ferguson from Mad Men, who was a part of the posse.
Oof.
The posse members that did not appear.
Lucas Hayes.
Lucas Hayes, not in it. Harmony, not in it. David Blaine, not in it. And then apparently Sarah Gilbert was posse adjacent.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was like a real motley crew.
Yeah, that is a wow.
What's amazing is, like, every time that they still hang out, like, in 2017, like, New York Magazine or someone else would like report on it. So it'd be like, oh, Kevin Connolly posted on Instagram a picture of him and all the rest of the posse like at a fight, watching like just a boxing match. And I remember one very distinctly, like he put a star over Leonardo DiCaprio's face because clearly Leonardo DiCaprio was like, I'm not acknowledging like this. Do not put a picture of me and the posse on social media.
Oh God.
And the most recent sighting of them together was, I want to say it was McGuire's daughter was having a play performance, and Connolly, Leo, I want to say Blaine, and maybe another one of them all went to this like girls' theater performance.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still hanging out even in their like mid 40s.
Oh yeah, they're each other's only friends. Yeah, it's just okay. So like as the night progresses, I think they got the note, like, okay, now say something real. So they all start saying really heavy shit, but none of it's landing because we don't like these people. And I'm like, I don't care if your dad almost died. You're a horrible person.
Yeah, and it's never like, I mean, it would make sense if they were drinking heavily, but it's they never really get drunk.
No, they're at a cafe.
There's no given reason why they would just be unburdening themselves, you know.
It all comes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I think I burst out laughing when someone said that their dad died.
Jenny Lewis says, my mom sold her ass on the street.
I'm just like, no, she didn't.
No.
No, she didn't.
You were in The Wiz. You know,
yeah, you were in Troop Beverly Hills.
Yeah, that's the other thing. That's a great point, Connie, because all these actors were child actors.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's granted there are child actors who have fucked up relationships with their families, you know, Shia LaBeouf and everything like that. But uh-huh. It's just like everyone knows that these people had like money from very early.
Yeah, yeah. And just like, yeah, I did not believe Jenny Lewis was a crackhead.
No.
None of these people. I mean, Leo's performance was good, even though I imagine they viewed him as the James Dean within this workshop.
Yes. Yeah. He definitely is the motor of the movie. Kevin Connolly amazingly acts the same way as he did when he was in his early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
McGuire made an insane choice. You know, Sisto. Not in it that much, but also makes, I mean, everyone just makes very bizarre choices throughout the movie.
Yeah, I think everyone was just told, make a strong choice. Mm-hmm. Make the strongest choice.
And then it's just like, oh, you know, shot over 6 days. Apparently they were talking, like, they workshopped it a little bit beforehand, but it apparently really was a lark. Apparently, like, the director wanted to make this other script, and Leonardo DiCaprio was like, no, it's bad. Let's just do an improvising, and DiCaprio was real into that, and then they shot it, and DiCaprio went to a set elsewhere pretty immediately, but, like, they only had a verbal agreement, and mm-hmm. that started all the litigation around the movie. Mm-hmm. Because I think if this movie got released, Connie, do you think this would have been like a successful indie movie? I think it would have been.
I mean, okay, so I saw this on YouTube and yes. I was reading the comments, and 8 out of 10 of the comments were like, I came here just for Leo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was the biggest star in the world in the mm-hmm. like 90s. I mean, and it's very, though it's much more extreme, it's still very much of the Miramax, Jersey City, like, canon. It feels like one step removed from Swingers or Pulp Fiction.
Yeah,
or
it's
like,
very much a remnant of its time.
Yeah.
Like, I think, I wonder if it got released right when around it was made. I don't think it would have been as damning as they thought it would be.
No, I think, I mean, for one thing, people were just much more naive and much more like easygoing about like actors. I think it would have been fine. Like DiCaprio really, even after Titanic, it's not like he really dug in on like the boy crush thing. It feels like he actually pushed against it. It probably would have been good for his, like if he wanted to get more roles that had a little bit more dirt under the fingernail, it would have been good for him. I think if anything, they were aware that like it painted them badly, but more so it's just bad. Like
it's really bad. It's not, it was like, I remember I looked at the time thing, the time bar, and I was like, is this almost over?
And I did that, and I was like, oh my God, 30 minutes. Because I was like, oh,
I was 30 minutes in. I was 30 minutes in.
Amber Benson just left. And I was like, well, clearly this is almost over.
Yeah. And then I was like, holy shit, this is an hour and a half and I'm only 30 minutes in. And at one point I was like, Connie, look at the screen. look at the screen. But yeah. It was so bad.
I didn't do this because I think it's like fun to like talk about, like, I mean, there were podcasts who do an excellent job about talking about bad movies. I think the movie is genuinely fascinating.
Uh-huh.
And I am also interested about, like, I mean, it is a little bit of that, like, I love you, Daddy, Woody Allen thing of people who like can't help but put their crimes in their art.
Yeah.
Not that what they were, the posse were doing were crimes that's ever been reported.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is just interesting. Just like, you know, people do make art about what's going on, and like, you know, they're like, clearly they wanted to talk about their relationship with women.
Mm-hmm. I think, I feel like what's so sad is I feel like I know what they were trying to do. I feel like they were trying to be like, they were trying to create a little piece of like a slice of life, a bittersweet piece of young ingenues in Hollywood. The issue is you can't do that if you're in it.
Yeah. And they're so self-obsessed that they can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah. And then if you're improvising it, you're making all of your performers semi-writers. You can't write something that you're in. And these aren't writers.
You know what this honestly reminded me of? And this was the second time watching this for the podcast was the second time I saw it. The first time I kind of half watched when it was like announced it leaked online.
Mm-hmm.
It reminded me, because all these people were on the precipice of being famous. And I'm going to talk very obliquely about this, but it reminds me, we're in comedy around UCB, and every now and then people will like make like feature films, low budget feature films, and it'll take several years and then it finally gets made. And then like there's always like a few people who are like have gone on to better success. And I'm not even singling out one movie because there's probably six or seven that like have done this. And it's always like somewhat awkward where it's just like, oh yeah, they probably regret doing that, right? So it's like they're on television now and they're kind of famous and I'm sure they don't want to be in this like dramedy about how being a boy in love stinks. Mm-hmm. You know? So like that's where like my mind went to.
Yeah. I think everyone regrets this movie. Mm-hmm. There's no way anyone.
I mean, not Artie Robb. He's still loving it. The producer's still loving it. Check out Save or Free Don's Plum. If you search Don's Plum,
I remember I seeing that website.
A 6,000 word essay. Ugh. The guy wrote a 6,000 word essay, and it's on YouTube. Because apparently he released it online on Vimeo. It got shut down around the time of the Leonardo DiCaprio's Oscar run for. The movie where he lives in a bear. I forgot what the
Revenant.
Name. Revenant. He took it down. It got put back on YouTube. And I think they're probably just like, it's better to like not draw attention to it by like taking it down more and more. It's just like, it's out there. It's not super embarrassing now, you know? It certainly isn't like as embarrassing as something like I Love You, Daddy or something like that. I think it's better for like their PR to kind of just like live with it.
Yeah.
I have a question that I was thinking of when I was watching this. Okay, who would make and be in the 2019 Don's Plum? Because I have what I want to see. I don't know if they would do it because they seem like sweet boys, but I want to see the Riverdale cast do Don's Plum. I want to see Cole Sprouse do his Don's Plum because I just think like that's young Hollywood. Who are like the 20-year-old about to be big things? Like I'll put because like. 5 years ago, it would have definitely been Franco, 100%, because Franco does all those exercises.
I'm thinking Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely doing it, but, like, those guys are now, like, in their 30s, like...
I want to say, I have no idea how old Vanessa Hudgens is. Yeah. She might be in there.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she would be the Jenny Lewis, because it's, you know, we need a music connection.
Yeah, who's that guy from High School Musical?
Efron.
Yeah, Zac Efron.
Yeah. I mean, because you want someone who's about to become like a big adult star in like grown-up movies who just made this formal exercise. And I think the Riverdale cast, I like Efron in there. Maybe he could have been like Don's Plum. I want to see Cole Sprouse be Leo. I like Vanessa Hudgens as the Ginny Lewis. I think you just got to have Ethan Suplee back to play Ethan Suplee's character.
I think he'd do it too.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I mean, he deserves a Oscar for playing so many of that character. Like he just like he does it grinds so well. On it. Yeah, he does a great job at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want, yeah, like that's the problem. It's like, yes, this movie is bad and misogynistic and embarrassing, but it's like everything nowadays is a little bit too PR tested, and I don't feel like you will ever get something like this again.
I think we will.
Okay. Well, I guess we did almost just get I Love You Daddy, which was like a self-finance thing about a guy who made all of his crimes
in a movie. I think YouTube stars would be in it.
Yes. Oh my God. Oh, Team
Logan
10.
Paul.
Team 10 doing Don's Plum.
Yeah. I definitely think Logan Paul would be in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All of those all YouTube stars would be in it. I absolutely feel like stuff like this, like every like with Don's Plum, like I feel like I can see why you'd be like, oh, they wouldn't be allowed to do something like this again. But people find a way.
But it also, it's like, oh no, culture has just become that. Everyone has, like, you know, I mean, on one hand, it's good that, you know, making mass media has never been easier. But now, you know, YouTube and everything is just, you know, people producing their own content. Mm-hmm. And some of it is super embarrassing and bad.
Yeah.
So we've just reached the point in culture where everything's Don Plum.
Yeah. I mean, we could make our own Don Plum.
Oh, my God. I would love to.
Oh, probably over 3 days, not six.
We don't need, okay. Name the restaurant in Los Angeles where you would do
Cafe
your
101.
101, yeah. I mean, that's a classic. You know, it was in a lot of indie movies in the 90s. But, okay. What about, if you're not going to do, like, a classic diner, I think I would want to set one at home. Just, like, do it at home on Hillhurst. And if anyone's not in L.A., home is something that the UC performer, Matt Cordova, said on Twitter. He called it Los Feliz Applebee's, which is the most appropriate thing ever, because it's that kind of food. It's just like happens to be in a hip neighborhood.
Yeah. I definitely see it some sort of like Fred 62.
Yeah.
People would be vaping.
People would be vaping nonstop. Instead of doing the bathroom monologues, they'll just be doing TikToks.
It would be a snap version of an Instagram story of their inner thoughts.
Yeah. Oh man.
Have you seen? Okay, the bathroom monologues reminded me of this Paul Scheer sketch where he does a one-man show of Entourage.
Yes.
Where he plays all the characters.
Yeah, that was, I mean, it might still be on Funny or Die, but if you haven't seen it, that was definitely like one of the first people making fun of Entourage-like things.
Mm-hmm. But he has a monologue within it. He's like, hey, I'm not really a tough guy, though. And that's what these monologues feel like. Like there'll be literally like a cut of a girl laughing at someone being like, what you guys did was mean. And then cut to her in the bathroom. She's like, I laughed though. And I'm just like,
yeah, it feels like a one act play.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like, you know, in like college theater, everyone did one act plays where the characters find out they're in hell because they don't realize they're plagiarizing Sartre's No Exit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this feels like.
Yeah, it's like, okay, everyone, I want you to have a secret. And when we get into the bathroom, I want you to tell us that secret.
If you like acting exercises, you will love Don's Plum.
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like there are definitely actors who are going to watch this and be like, yeah, but I mean, yeah, that's...
I know what he's doing here. I know I've done this exercise. Mm-hmm. The whole thing feels like one big actor's exercise. It's so 90s. It's so that.
And that's the thing I probably like the most is because, like, I got in, like, I think a lot of people my age, I definitely kind of got into indie cinema through that, like, 90s Miramax, like, indie wood renaissance. Like,
mm-hmm.
I got the DVDs, you know, I was a big Swingers, you know, Kevin Smith guy. And, like, so, like, that 90s era stuff, like, really, like, stirs it's a real Proustian moment for mm-hmm. me when I see like diners in Los Angeles in the mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm a sucker for that shit. Everything else is bad.
I have a question. Do you think this could have been good?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like most things, if instead of improv, and I say this as someone who does improv on the regular, instead of doing improv, they wrote it. I think if they actually thought what they wanted to say about their behavior, that would be interesting. But I mean, all the casts have done good work. Maybe Artie Robb, maybe if you get a good director and a good editor. Yeah, I think you could do, I think at the very least you can make this a passable 90s indie movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's a super hard bar to jump over, because so many of those films, you know, have aged so horribly. You know, there's definitely that like post Tarantino wave of like, you know, violent, you know, gangster movies. You know, there's definitely that like guys rom-com post Swingers. So like, I mean, there's just so much shit in the 90s that just doesn't hold up, that I think it wouldn't be hard for Don's Plum to step over a very low bar, which it does not do currently.
It's just so strange, like, to you know, a movie's bad when it makes you aware of the structure of movies. Mm-hmm. Like if something makes you aware of sound, editing, cinematography, if you could tell the actors are improvising. It's
when you're thinking about like, oh, I wonder how, oh, that's another thing. When that first scene in where Jeremy Sisto kicks out Amber Benson, you just see reflected in the car dash. You just see a giant light. It is like just like bright as can be.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of it's lit. It's lit poorly. And it's just in, it does not help that it's black and white.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just. Does shooting in black and white, is that cheaper? Or
I think at the time it was. I remember because I listened to the Kevin Smith director's commentary for Chasing Amy, and he explained that he had to shoot it on black and white and Clerks on black and white because it was cheaper at the time. But now I think it's certainly, if you want to shoot on film, period, I'm sure a regular film is probably cheaper.
Where is yours, Don's Plum?
Oh, my Don's Plum is a dune on Glendale in Atwater Village. It's the Mediterranean. I would just hang out there all day if I could. I mean, it's not really set up that you can hang out. I mean, I do love diners. So, like, I'm at, like, Cafe 101. I'm at Fred 62. I'm at House of Pies. Like, my favorite food is probably like American diner food, but my favorite restaurant is Dune because I love, they have like a fried eggplant sandwich. Where would your Don's Plum be?
I would have to say if we were shooting it, it would be at Cafe 101, but if we were gonna be follow my life, it would probably be at Fred 62's. And maybe Public House.
Yeah, Public House would be a funny Don's Plum because it's such a
It has the space.
It has the space. I was going to say, do I want to put this on wax? Or do I want to say that Public House is a bad place?
It's one of those places where people like will openly shit on it, but they'll be like, let's go here.
Yeah, because it's a place that has the most space. It's very convenient.
Mm-hmm.
This is a real podcast for Hillhurst heads.
Mm-hmm. Ye Rustic.
Ye Rustic would definitely be. I could see it being at Drawing Room too.
Yeah.
That feels like a real vibe that has. But Don's Plum looks weird because it's like a place where you can drink, but it looks like a diner.
Yeah.
So, and, I mean, it is a diner. So it's you can't do it at a bar that doesn't have food. Maybe The Roost, because that has Thai food there as well as just beer and shit.
I didn't know The Roost had food.
Yeah, they serve like, it's a Thai restaurant as well. It's very bizarre.
Interesting.
There is still a restaurant at Don's Plum's location.
What is it now?
I don't remember what it's called, but it's on Victory Boulevard in Van Nuys. So like definitely go there. I want to get a group of people. I want to project Don's Plum there. I want to get sued by Tobey Maguire.
Why is he afraid you're going to show it to someone?
Yeah. I want to just straight up project it onto a building.
Okay. So this, I am not going to watch this movie again.
I probably will.
It was so not watchable for me. It was so hard to watch.
Yeah, but I don't know. It's awful, but like I'm also just destroy my brain by watching shit I don't enjoy all the time.
I would only recommend this to people who I'm like, do you want to see some weird nugget of time?
Yeah, I do. That's the thing. I like the nugget of time. I like as I said earlier, I like art where it feels like people are unconsciously like confessing to mm-hmm. behavior. So all that stuff, like, and yeah, I like that 90s indie world. Mm-hmm. So I'll probably, I think I could probably get through the first 30 minutes. Around the time Amber Benson gets exiled, I think I'd turn it off because it has my two favorite things, which is the insane jazz scene and then the way they treat Amber Benson.
Okay, so let's say people watch this.
If you enjoyed it, what I would suggest you do is go to a therapist and unpack your
Toby Maguire?
Yeah, are you Toby Maguire? Go to a therapist, find out why you hate women, find out what your mother did to you. But if you want to see movies that are like this, but better, I have four I would suggest. One is, if you want to see a black and white improvised movie, check out Cassavetes' Shadow. It's the original. It's great. I mean, all of Cassavetes' work is really good, and I'm a big fan of, but like, that's what this feels like it's trying to be a little bit. Mm-hmm. If you want to see a movie made by a member of the Pussy Posse in the 90s that I enjoy, I mean, I know a lot of people don't like his work, but check out Gummo. I'm a big Harmony Korine's definitely.
I didn't know he was in the Pussy Posse.
Yeah. He and David Blaine both. Apparently, there's like this insane project that's never been released called Fight Harm, where it's.
I've heard about this.
Yeah, I think this was like in the height of like Harmony Korine's substance abuse problem, but it was just like Harmony Korine provoking people into fights in real life, and David Blaine filming it.
Yeah, which
is insane. But yeah, if you want to see a good, I like Gummo. I mean, it's definitely a divisive movie, but that would be my.
Gummo's one of my favorite movies.
Yeah, I think it's fantastic. Maybe eventually we can talk about that sometime. If you want to see a movie that I think handles like male misogyny really well, I like the Mike Nichols movie Carnal Knowledge. It's definitely one of the lesser seen of his. It's Jack Nicholson and Art Garfunkel. It's really well done. I think it deserves as much viewing as The Graduate. And then, like, if you're just like me and you love like looking at like 90s LA shit, watch Jackie Brown. Like, it's full of that stuff. It looks gorgeous. Even if you don't like Tarantino, it hits that part of my brain that is pleased by looking at old LA stuff. Or you can just watch Los Angeles Plays Itself, that documentary that I think is available on Netflix, but it may not be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would recommend, if you want to see a 90s black and white film that's low budget but well done, I would say Clerks.
Oh, yeah.
And I would say, I would also recommend Gummo.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also recommend, I hope I'm not confusing this. Is it Scanner Darkly, the one that's all animated?
Scanner Darkly is rotoscoped. Yeah.
A Scanner Darkly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, I mean, get your full pretentious on.
Yeah. That or Waking Life.
Waking Life is what I'm thinking of.
Waking Life is the one that has no real narrative thrust. Scanner mm-hmm. Darkly is based off of the Philip K. Dick movie. Though Waking Life probably loses points for having Alex Jones in it.
I did not know that.
Because he was just this cult figure in Austin, and Linklater was like, this guy's goofy. And back in that day, people didn't realize that the guy would turn out to be super dangerous. But, you know, it's a fascinating artifact.
Drew, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a blast.
This was so nice. Yeah. Where can people find you?
I'm on Twitter at Drew Spurs, like what's on the bottom of your boot. You can see me perform at the UCB Theater weekly with Cardinal Redbird, Tuesdays at 11. I also perform regularly around Los Angeles. Just be aware of my Twitter feed for that. By the time this drops, I don't know if it will be launched, but I am launching my own podcast sometime this spring. So just follow me on Twitter and you'll get more details about that. If it's not launched by the time this airs, then I'm a coward who has issues around perfectionism.
Okay, fantastic. Well, that's about it for this episode of Indie Darlings. And if you want to say more, you could rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe. And I think that's all for tonight. You could follow us on Indie Darlings Podcast on Instagram and Twitter and indiedarlingspodcast@gmail.com. Thank you and good night.
My name is Caitlin Hempstead, and I'm the host of Lizard People, a podcast about conspiracy theories. Every week, I invite a hilarious comedian slash friend of mine to argue their favorite conspiracy theory with me. Will they convince me that a cursed mummy sunk the Titanic, or that Avril Lavigne is being impersonated by her own clone? You're gonna have to listen to find out. Lizard People is on the Campfire Media Network, and you can tune in every Friday on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pod media. Bye!
Campfire.